I have nothing to disclose. So today, just to review what I'm going to talk about, review a little bit about the health disparities facing individuals with behavioral health disorders, and then really discuss why it's important to incorporate wellness into behavioral healthcare treatment and into agencies. Discuss briefly about some treatments, wellness treatments that are out there and being used and have been successful with this population, and then briefly discuss some strategies for implementing wellness programming into behavioral health care settings. Oh, I'm going backwards. Okay. And just to give you a little bit of background about what we do, I work at the Behavioral Health and Wellness Program, and what we do is develop and help agencies implement wellness programming into behavioral health care settings and really focus on tobacco and obesity, and then we also do program evaluation and research on the programs that we help implement, develop and help implement. And we've started this from a wellness philosophy because it's really important, we believe, to promote behaviors that lead to good health, especially in this population. We know that morbidity and mortality rates for persons with behavioral health disorders are significantly more so than the general population, largely in part due to modifiable risk factors. So poor nutrition, tobacco use, lack of exercise, but also they have difficulty accessing quality care that actually can help them address their health behavior change needs. And so that's what we go out and try to promote because it's important. You know, and the way that we approach this too is that it's more than just the absence of illness. So what we want to do is help people with behavioral health disorders live well in all areas of their life, economically, socially. And you can't do that if you're dying from tobacco use and nobody's helping you address that. So really encouraging people to take a whole person approach to caring for this population instead of just alleviating symptoms and getting them out of your office. We know that people with behavioral health disorders are dying 25, and now the research is actually showing 30 years earlier than the general population. And going to focus on tobacco use and obesity. These are illnesses, so like cancer, heart disease, COPD, complications from type 2 diabetes. And we know that these are health behaviors that we can change. And we've implemented programs and it's been successful and we've seen reductions and actually see people, you know, going from smoking 2 packs a day to running a marathon. And so it's pretty incredible. And so we know that they can do this. I think when you go and try to implement these programs into behavioral health care settings, it's really important also to keep in mind the vulnerabilities of this population. They have physiological predispositions, especially when you're talking about tobacco. We do know that, for example, nicotine does help with mood moderation. It helps with sensory gain for people with schizophrenia. But the benefit is so short-lived, and they're really doing more harm than they are any good. The psychotropic medications that they take, it's making them cause weight gain, there's metabolic issues, there's liver problems, and they do deal with a lot of negative symptoms, especially from depression, lack of motivation, and so they require more intensive therapies to get them engaged in health behavior change, but that doesn't mean they can't do it, because they can. Agencies and clinicians also have competing demands, so when we walk in and we're like, hey, guess what? Do one more thing in addition to all that you're doing. And it's hard to get the staff motivated to encourage their clients to engage in health behavior change. So we really work with them to try to do that. And also, you know, we all understand that this population has poor and fragmented care, inadequate services. A lot of them, you know, are using the ER for their healthcare needs for the crisis intervention. And they have a lot of financial barriers. And I'll talk about it a little bit, but you know, if we start addressing, like just for example, tobacco use. So if you can get somebody to reduce or quit tobacco, that's going to put money in their pocket that may help them buy healthier foods, may help them get a gym membership that they couldn't otherwise afford. Some more alarming statistics. So we know that half of all the annual tobacco-related deaths are persons with behavioral health disorders. And we also know that people with mental illnesses and addictions are consuming 34% of all cigarettes smoked in the nation. And that is alarming and that's concerning. We also know that smokers with mental illnesses have more psychiatric symptoms compared to those who don't, and they require higher doses of medication. So again, going back, if we help people reduce or quit smoking, they're gonna have less need for medications, they're gonna have more money in their pocket. And we also, again, know that obesity is more prevalent in this population compared to the general population. So talk about building a case for wellness. If you address some of these issues, if you help somebody be well in the physical realm, in the mental realm, then they're gonna see improvements in social, in self-esteem. They're also probably gonna see improvements in occupational. We were just talking to some people today who were saying that this population that they're working with, they're not being able to get hired because they're smoking, because a lot of employers have tobacco-free policies. So if you get somebody to stop smoking, you know, again, they're gonna achieve wellness in all areas. Some myths that are still out there and that we hope continued research in this area will dispel is that, one, persons with behavioral health disorders are more addicted to nicotine and so they can't quit. And also that they can't engage in health behavior change, they can't lose weight, they don't want to. And that's not true. We've done surveys, we know they want to quit, we know they want to lose weight, we know that they want to be well, but just they're not given the right tools and the right resources to do so. One example of something that is working, Amanda Baker, who is a researcher in Australia, her team actually did a smoking and weight study, and the outcome that they were looking at is reduction in chronic heart disease. But why we really think this is interesting is so often you hear when you need to address just the smoking or just the weight. You can't do it at the same time. And more research is finding that actually addressing health behavior change and addressing it all at the same time is really successful, especially in this population. They can do it and they want to do it. And as people start exercising, they actually start losing weight and then they start reducing their cigarette use. So, you know, it's kind of dispelling those old myths that this population can't do it. There's an InShape program that's going on in New Hampshire, and it's a community-based exercise program. And I really love this, especially because some of the people that I work with, they won't go to the Y. They won't even get on the bus. They won't get out of the office. They won't get out of their home to engage in any exercise for either depressive symptoms or even paranoia. And the study done on this InShape program actually showed that once they started going and once the people started engaging with the counselors at the YMCA and the group that they were associated with, they actually had decreases in social anxiety, they had improvements in self-esteem, and they were losing weight. And they had improvements in self-efficacy, so they really believed that they could do things, which is really about being well. And as you can see, I get really excited about this. So why behavioral healthcare settings? Why should we focus on that and not primary care settings? I mean, this is obesity and tobacco use. Well, we know that this population requires more intensive therapies when they're trying to engage in health behavior change. So it makes sense to work with behavioral healthcare agencies and providers and provide them education and the tools so they can go work with their clients. Also, client preferences and motivation. Behavioral healthcare administrators that are providers are really geared and set to work with this client, these clients and this population, more so than the primary care sector. They're better equipped at addressing psychosocial needs, the unique medications that come up in this population, especially when you're talking about tobacco reduction, because there's, as soon as you reduce a lot of the tobacco products that are in the system, they actually need less medication. And so the psychiatrists and the behavioral healthcare providers can better work with this population. And then the primary care sector, I wouldn't say that they're not equipped, but really mental health care providers, they're the front line. This population is going to the mental health care providers first and foremost before they go to their primary care physicians, if they even go to a primary care physician. And so again, that's why we want to work with behavioral health care agencies to engage their clients in health behavior change. And so what are some strategies to do this? Well, we've worked and been really successful in helping agencies do some simple changes. So intake, screening, and your normal assessments that you do, you had a couple questions. Are you interested in quitting smoking? Are you interested in engaging in exercise and weight loss? And once you start the conversation and once you get that conversation going, it's amazing the response. They're like, yeah, I actually have always thought about quitting smoking, but I didn't think I could. And then, you know, you do the ask, advise, refer, where you're asking them, advise them, and then you refer them out to resources that are available in your community. And adding weight control and tobacco cessations into treatment planning, again, just even a couple questions as you're giving that treatment to your clientele is really helpful. It starts the conversation, it gets them going. Providing educational materials, so again, you know, tying into agencies like us, we provide education, but the American Cancer Society, the CDC, they have tons of free information that's available on their website that you could download and hand to your clients if they are interested in engaging in health behavior change. And also, I'm almost done. also a lot of groups, we have found that this population responds really well to group activity. And so if you can incorporate and get the group leaders to incorporate health behavior change discussions into their groups, we know that it can be really successful. And that's it. So thank you.